They do a lot of fracking down there?
Yeah, quite a bit. Every time I go into Walmart, I see examples. Oh, wait, no, we're talking about something else, aren't we? Oh, God.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Lord of America!
Because if you've got scientists that are talking nonstop about the possibility of other worlds, other realities, other timelines, then it's no longer science fiction. Okay, now we have something hard that we can take a look at when we're talking about our more sort of obscure and enigmatic theories and ideas.
Our grid theory basically is, it's an amalgamation of several different ideas, a bunch of different ideas, backed by science that help to explain and answer that very question, what actually happens when you die? Where do you go? What is it like? What happens?
But, you know, we're putting out books that are kind of pushing the boundaries, and that's what we want to do.
Pushing the boundaries and pissing people off.
Pissing people off.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio, with your host, Tim Banal.
What is going on, my friends? This is Tim Banal of banalofamerica.com with another edition of BOA Audio Season 8. On this installment of the program, we've got a couple of familiar voices to the hardcore and longtime BOA Audio listeners, as two great friends of BOA Audio make their seasonal return to the program, Marie Jones and Larry Flaxman, known as the Para Explorers, join us to detail their two new books, The Grid and Viral Mythology. And as is the fashion, when the three of us get together, the playbook and questions essentially get thrown out the window in favor of organic conversation and deeply abstract discussion. Over the course of the program, we are going to be looking at the grid theory, which is a whole new concept put forward by Marie and Larry, and we're really going to dig into it from a variety of angles, including what happens after death, which is really the seed of the grid theory, as well as information. It's discussed so often, but what is it? Is it a force? Is it a dimension? Is it something entirely different that I cannot even put into words? We're going to try and get to the bottom of that. Additionally, we'll talk about the mutable nature of reality and a whole bunch more heady topics. Then we're going to move on to discussing viral mythology, and during that portion of the conversation, we're going to get into ancient aliens, how vast amounts of information about humankind's ancestry has been lost forever, archaeological anomalies that suggest technologically advanced races existing far into the distant past, plus, of course, tons and tons more. Like meeting up with a couple of old friends at the corner pub, this conversation seemingly picks up right where we left off the last time we talked to Marie and Larry. It was almost as if I had just done the previous interview with them days earlier, but of course it continues into some new and intriguing waters as the Para Explorers, Marie Jones and Larry Flaxman, join us once again on BOA Audio. Since this is a double guest edition of the program, I'm going to spare the impatient listeners who will not stand to listen to two bios at the beginning of the program, but let me plug the books that have been put together here collectively by Marie Jones and Larry Flaxman. They are 1111, The Time Prompt Phenomenon, The Resonance Key, This Book is from the Future, The Deja Vu Enigma, and The Trinity Secret. Marie and Larry have appeared on the program numerous times in the past, so if any of those titles pique your interest, dig into the BOA audio archive because we've dedicated episodes of the program to each of those previous books. And here, on this installment of the show, we're digging into their two new books, The Grid, as well as Viral Mythology. And if you want to know more about Marie and Larry, head on over to their website, www.paraexplorers.com. Pretty simple, all one word, paraexplorers.com. With all that said, let's get down to business and rock and roll. This interview was recorded on April 1st, 2014. Marie Jones and Larry Flaxman talking about The Grid and Viral Mythology on BOA Audio Season 8. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of BOA Audio Season 8. Already have a feeling it's going to be a raucous conversation full of many laughs because our old friends Marie Jones and Larry Flaxman are back making their annual appearance on another season of BOA Audio. And I think this year they really set out to make me look bad because they put out two books. So I'm really in over my head with their tremendous work as it is. Now I've got two to deal with. First is The Grid, Exploring the Hidden Infrastructure of Reality, and then following that more recently, Viral Mythology, How the Truth of the Ancients Was Encoded and Passed Down Through Legend, Art, and Architecture. Fascinating stuff. I'm really very intrigued by the Viral Mythology, and I know that you guys consider this grid to be, I don't want to call it a magnum opus or anything crazy like that, because I'd be putting words in your mouths, but I know that it's something you guys have put a lot of thought into. So I guess we'll exchange the pleasantries now. Welcome back to the program, Marie and Larry. We're sitting up to our elbows already here. It's going to be fun.
Well, thank you for having us back again.
Definitely.
You're a glutton for punishment, aren't you?
Well, normally I got to go on Craigslist for that kind of thing, but thankfully it all works out this time.
So, oh, boy.
That one's for you, Larry. I thought I would get a hearty chuckle out of you on that one.
I don't think he got it.
All right.
It just went right over his head.
I didn't get it, no.
All right, well.
I'll explain it to you later.
Yeah.
Off the air.
All right.
So I mentioned here at the start, here, the grid. This, you guys were talking about this last time you were on. This is a big, and you say in the introduction, it was something that was really kind of born out of, much like conversations we're having right now, just sort of talking, chewing the breeze, or whatever you call it, and just mulling over ideas. So talk about The Grid, how this all came together, and give us a thumbnail. What is The Grid? Because it's sort of a vast idea.
Gosh, that's hard.
Mm.
Want me to go first, since I'm the lady?
Well, yes. I really do think that Tim kind of summed up, though. It is the magnum opus, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, well, up until now, because we're already brewing all kinds of new stuff. But I think, I recall on many occasions, because Larry and I have known each other for going on 7 years now.
Hmm.
And there would be times when Larry would be coming home from an investigation, and he would call me with like, hey, what do you think of this? This happened, or what do you think of that? And we'd be on the phone for like hours, just going back and forth. I don't know if you remember that, Larry, but I mean, there were times when it was just idea after idea, just bang, 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 and constantly going back and forth.
Mm.
And a lot of that stuff ended up going into our books.
Mm-hmm.
And I think over time it sort of culminated in this concept. I mean, you can call it a theory in a sense. Maybe not a pure scientific theory, but certainly a theory that is based on the research and the ideas that we've done. And we put it together in this book as sort of a culmination up to this point of what we were doing with science and the paranormal and human physiology and psychology and how all of that came together to describe not just our reality, but other levels of reality, because that's really what we were thinking.
Hmm.
That there were these other levels of reality that we've been interacting with. And, you know, how do we find evidence of that in science? And how does that play into the paranormal? How does human physiology, how does quantum physics, how does the environment, how does all of that stuff play into this one big theory? And I think The Grid is kind of introductory in a sense because we were only allowed to write a certain word count. But that book could have been five times as thick.
Oh, I'm sure.
All of the research that we wanted to put in to back up what we were saying. And I'm sure that over time we will do that anyway.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, well, you said it's like a culmination of all these books and stuff, and I'm sure there's future books in the ether of the grid.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, Larry, you know, your point of view might be a little different.
Not really.
It never is. That's why we love Larry so much. But really, Larry, I guess we'll pivot on Larry. We'll challenge Larry a little here.
Yeah.
And we'll see.
Challenge away.
What'd you say?
Challenge away.
All right. Why don't you give me? Now, Marie sort of gave me the idea, the abstract of the grid. If you were to try and sit down and talk to simple old me, how would you sort of explain this, the infrastructure of the reality? Is it like, what is it composed of? Might be even a good place to jump off of on this.
What is it composed of? That's actually a really good question. I can't say that we have the answers to everything.
I realize that.
Unfortunately. But if I had to guess, I would say that it's information. I mean, it's composed of information, energy and information. Energy is information. Information is energy. So I think that the two are very interchangeable. But as far as how to communicate it to a layperson. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think the easiest way to do that would be to ask a question. And that question would go something like this. Have you ever had anyone in your life that you have cared greatly about pass away?
Yeah.
Yes, okay. Have you ever wondered what actually happened to them?
Absolutely, yeah.
There you go. That's the grid. Our grid theory basically is kind of, it's an amalgamation of several different ideas, a bunch of different ideas, backed by science, that help to explain and answer that very question. What actually happens when you die? Where do you go? What is it like? What happens? You know, do you simply wink out of existence like a fading star? Is it ashes to ashes, dust to dust? Or is there actually something more to it? Is death actually a form of rebirth? And I think in many aspects that it is. I think the process of dying, which of course all of us are dying, from the moment of birth you begin the slow process of dying, but the process of death or dying, we believe actually is more representative of the process of being born. You are being born into a new world. You are reanimating in a way to a completely different level of the grid. One it's a reality that is completely and wholly different than our physicality, but one that is just as real.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay.
It's like a transition, really.
More yeah, that makes
finality. People make death.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the perfect example of the different levels of the grid is to talk to somebody about death, because so much of our beliefs surrounding death are feelings of finality. And yet, if you talk to people who have had near-death experiences or have been dead for a while, or even scientists, you know, the whole deal with consciousness and not being able to explain what happens to that after the body dies really does suggest that maybe it's not final, it's not a fade to black, that what is happening is we are going to another level of reality, one that is much different from this one where we operate from the five senses. But yet we still kind of get glimpses of it now and then with what we call quote-unquote paranormal experiences. And I think everybody's had those feelings that they've experienced a different
sure.
reality, whether they're dreaming or have deja vu or they have an out-and-out ghost, you know, interaction or what have you. And just also looking back at religious writings and science itself, talking about the multiverse and parallel universes. I mean, this stuff is everywhere.
Right, right.
So we wanted to try to give a visual image to this idea of an infrastructure of realities. You know, a lot of people talk about the field, but that's a two-dimensional image.
Yeah.
We didn't like that because we kind of felt like this is right. more like a grid where you got layers and layers off to the side and on top and below, and but you've got connectors, you know, by which you can access one level or another. So it just kind of grew out of this desire that we had to give people a visual of of what our concept was.
I'm wrapping my mind around it as we speak. It's very, I'm reminded of conversations we've had in the past about sort of the idea of the radio tuner. I've used the example before. I know you guys,
yeah.
I'm sure, heard it from other places. I'd like to know who coined the original version of that, because it's great. But, you know, the idea that we exist on, like, Kiss 108, but really there's all these other radio stations out there.
Right, exactly. And, you know, you tune in to only one station at a time, maybe consciously. That doesn't mean those other stations aren't out there operating. They're broadcasting on a different bandwidth. And when I was young, and everybody had a CB radio back in the day, and I just remember, and I have a ham radio now, and it had, and Larry does too. And sometimes you get crosstalk. You get, be listening to a particular conversation, and you get a little bit of another conversation.
Yeah, true.
That's really what we are looking at as circumstantial evidence, because it's really not proof, of other levels of reality. We get those little glimpses. We get that little crosstalk.
Yeah.
You know, but how do we kind of follow through on it and learn more about it? It's so elusive.
Right, right. So, like, as we talk about the radio sort of idea of it, it's like, it's, I feel compelled to dispel this, is there a mention of ley lines anywhere in this?
I don't know.
Because when people first hear grid and sort of the idea, their minds go to ley lines. At least I did it first. That's what I mentioned.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, some people look at it that as being part of the visual, that there might be spots on Earth where you can, I don't know, because of the environmental influences, access another level of the grid. But I don't think we talked about them in this book.
Yeah. No, it wasn't. Yeah. That was kind of... I'm not sure where I was going with that, except to point out that it probably wasn't in the book, because it's ley lines. It seems kind of to dispel it. So.
Well, yeah, there's always talking about there being a grid here, you know, in the Earth.
Right, right.
A grid that different electromagnetic frequencies allow us to experience. But we kind of figure that grid exists everywhere. I mean, it doesn't have an end. You know, if you're talking about things like the zero-point field, there's no end to that.
Right.
It's infinite. So therefore, can we say that there is no end to the different levels of reality that exist in this grid?
Well, it's an interesting conundrum in a way, too. Talked about this in the past. It seems, can we ever really know the true nature of the grid because of our point within it?
Yeah, it's like being a fish in the ocean.
Yeah,
do you ever really know the magnitude of the ocean you're swimming in? I don't know. I mean, I think we're pretty optimistic when we write, but I don't know that we're meant to ever have final proof. And people say, well, when you die, you're going to know everything. How do you know?
Yeah.
Maybe you'll know less.
Right.
Or you'll just know one next level. I don't know. I don't know if our consciousness is capable of experiencing the entire multiverse that, you know, we're being told might be out there. What do you think, Larry?
Yeah, do you think science can catch up in a way?
I think also until we actually understand what the hell reality actually is, that I think we're kind of spinning our wheels trying to figure out what everything else beyond that is. I mean, we still don't know exactly what is real from what's not. I mean, obviously, we can measure physical things. We have knowledge of physical things, but, you know, there's still so many things, even in our world that we don't know. We don't know how to measure lots of things. We don't know how to discern lots of things. We know they exist. We just don't have a way to scientifically measure them.
Right.
So we still don't know everything. I mean, we are still so primitive and we still have so many things to learn that maybe, like you said, maybe we don't have the ability to comprehend it, or maybe we're just not at that point in evolution yet,
right,
where we have the mental capacity to even try to comprehend some of it.
Maybe our brains couldn't handle it at this point.
Yeah,
right, right.
What was that movie? Oh God, it was
Lawnmower Man.
No, with the movie, you want the truth, you can't handle the truth.
A Few Good Men.
Yeah.
Seeking Man, yeah, that was it. Yeah, Seeking Man, yeah. Yeah, I mean, maybe that's more reality than we know.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was thinking as I was sort of pitching the question there to you. It's like, well, the other end of it is, are we stuck in this perspective or with this way? Because you guys obviously talk a lot about the science that sort of makes up the fabric of the grid theory. It makes you wonder, maybe, and the reason I said Lawnmower Man just now is because I was kind of thinking of the idea, like, what if technology advances to the point where then they can supplement our inabilities to perceive the true nature of the grid?
Right. That's like that Johnny Depp movie that's coming out. What is it called? Transcendence, where he dies and becomes a part of singularity, and he sort of transcends his consciousness into technology, and that talks about that. And yeah, I don't think that we're anywhere near understanding the expansiveness of the world that we live in. And I have a feeling it's because we probably wouldn't know how to survive if we did know all that.
Yeah.
I don't know how we would stay grounded enough to survive as a species if all of a sudden our minds were open to every other multiverse or timeline or reality. I think there really is a very intelligent reason why we're so stupid. You know? I mean, we're so limited at this point. Always, it's always about survival. So we certainly know more now than we did 100, 200, 1,000 years ago in terms of science.
Sure.
But I don't know. I mean, Larry and I talk about this a lot. It's a real struggle to try to, to come to terms with the fact that personal experience may always trump scientific proof. What do we do with that? We may never be able to prove some things. Are we going to be happy with just people's personal experiences as proof?
That connects to something Larry said that I thought was interesting, where he said we don't even know what reality is. And,
right.
And I think what you guys have done a lot of good work on is to sort of acknowledge and accept and try to work within the parameters that we realize that the world is composed of two things in a way, the world and the person in the world who's experiencing
right.
it.
The observer, yeah.
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 And that's something that needs to be sort of looked at, I think.
I think we're certainly making great strides. The research that's been done into quantum physics and even, you know, cosmology, we have a greater understanding of our universe, the big and the small. It certainly helped. But the ultimate questions, like Larry said earlier, we still don't really know what happens to us when we die. So none of the technology and advancement in scientific knowledge has really gotten us any closer to the answer to that question. What it's done is opened up more possibilities.
Right.
Because if you've got scientists that are talking nonstop about the possibility of other worlds, other realities, other timelines, then it's no longer science fiction. Okay, now we have something hard that we can take a look at when we're talking about our more sort of obscure and enigmatic theories and ideas. Mm-hmm. Now we can say, well, hey, if they believe this, maybe that's what happens when you die.
Yeah.
You go to one of those other universes. You go to another timeline. Maybe ghosts are not the essence of a dead person in this reality.
Right.
It's the human element that complicates it all, I think, and that's why science has trouble with these prickly questions about the nature of the universe, who we are, where we go when we die, even the paranormal stuff. You know,
right,
it's tough for them to really wrap their minds around it.
Well, Einstein was fascinated with this stuff. So was Tesla. So were most of the great grandfathers of quantum physics. David Bohm, he was a metaphysician if there ever was one. But when it came to their published works, I guess you could say, you know, they had to stick to the academics.
Well, again, it goes back to this. It's like I think there's this like uniquely human element to it of the individual observer. I said one time when we did the show, I thought, what if the whole world just began when I was born, and all of the stuff that before that was just made up by me before I was born, you know? It's possible.
And when you die, it all ends. I mean, that is a theory of reality, that this is all one person's dream. You know, this is all one person's imaginings, and you and I were all just little players, and it could be Larry's, you know, or it could be mine. And that kind of stuff is hard to wrap your mind around, but we don't know if that's not true.
I'm honored that Larry would create me in his fabricated reality.
Yeah, thanks, like Larry.
It'd be more like a midget, I think.
I would, or you? You would.
I know, you would, Tim. Not me.
And he would make me much less of a pain in the ass, I think. Right, Larry? He's like, yeah, damn.
Probably so.
Ooh, I'm going to get you.
Oh, my
but
goodness.
That, you know, I mean, we knew, writing so much about the paranormal, talking so much about it, and we just kept saying to each other, we don't even know what reality is. You know, how could we really ever answer these paranormal questions? And so that kind of...
Well, on a base level of the whole paranormal thing, I've observed this with just people in the paranormal. It's you talk about reality. Their idea of reality is different from the reality of the shared mainstream.
Yeah.
It's stunning when you step back and look at it. These are people who, you know, who think that Barack Obama struggles over what to do about UFOs like every night before he goes to bed. There are people that probably believe that.
The Illuminati are listening to our conversation as we speak. You do know that, don't you? Shows you the power of belief, and what does that have to do with the formation of individual reality?
Mm.
I mean, even collective reality. If we all believe the same thing, so are we really constructing this sort of collective reality that we've all bought into?
Right.
And then you've got the oddballs that don't buy into it, and they're considered freaks and schizophrenics and, you know, God knows what else.
You could think elephants were yellow or something. And it might turn out that you're the one that's actually right. You have your eye condition actually is the proper way to see it or something.
But you could go to a society or a tribe that's never seen an elephant, and you tell them it's yellow. They believe it's yellow. That becomes their reality, and that shows you how just the words that we use to describe our reality are really kind of lame.
Yeah, well, it's the whole idea, all this stuff. I commend you guys in writing the book too, because it's like, it's just difficult to even talk about this stuff. Words start falling over each other. They're very abstract.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, sometimes I have trouble putting together words on what I'm trying to say here, because it's like, do I mean dimension or reality or consciousness or thought or the mind? It's like, what?
Semantics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's difficult stuff to pin down, but it's fascinating. It really is. Now, what connect this with? We'll do for the hardcore paranormalists out there. We'll connect it in here with the ghosts. What do you mention here? Let me see the thing. Where'd it go on me?
Let's talk about orbs.
Actually, really?
No, really not.
Okay, I was going to mention because I wanted to sort of connect this in with
Larry going.
No.
Well, how do you see the ghost phenomenon fitting in all this, Larry? Because you're the ghost man. I mean, you
the ghost go-to guy.
Yeah, you really are. If I have a serious question about ghosts, I would actually turn to you. Unfortunately, I almost never do, which is why you don't hear from me as often as you think. But how do you fit the ghost thing into all this? Because it sounds like in a way this kind of bubbled up from your work. Looking at researching the ghost stuff, as Marie was saying, these conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right, Tim. I mean, there's a huge connection to it. And I've said many times on many, many shows that my motivation for the field has strictly been a selfish one, in that I have been more interested in finding answers for myself than anything, which then in turn I can educate others. But primarily it's for me. I want to know what actually happens after you die. I mean, that's my motivation. So how does it actually fit in? Okay, so that's a great question. I think it fits in very well. It is a very fitting piece of the puzzle because there is a significant, before we even get to that, I think I've probably preached on your show before about what I think one of the biggest downfalls of most folks in the paranormal. One of the greatest bitches that I have about the paranormal. And if I haven't, I'll just refresh really quick.
That's fine. I'd love to hear it if I haven't already.
The greatest problem that I have with the paranormal is that, well, first of all, I think it's probably one of the most closed-minded, quote, sciences. You got to put quotes around that because it's really a very fragmented, segmented hobby, really, more than anything else. I mean, there's not a lot of folks that are very seriously
involved in paranormal research. There's a lot of people that tell you, yeah, we're ghost hunters, we've got the K2s and the ovuluses, and, you know, that's great. We all watch the TV shows, but that's really not reality. If you're wanting to study a phenomena that you are not familiar with, the best way to do that would be, firstly, to network with other folks that are subject matter experts. Now, I'm not talking subject matter experts in the ghost field, because I don't think there are any. By its very definition, paranormal is anything outside of the realm of current scientific understanding. So if anyone tells you that they're an expert in the paranormal, kick them in the nuts and run away, because there's no such thing. But that's a huge problem. You don't see paranormal groups interfacing with subject matter experts. You don't see any type of peer review. You don't see any type of connection with higher education, for instance. There's very few groups out there that have any true understanding of what the scientific method actually entails. So lots of groups will tell you, well, we're scientific, we use equipment, which really the two things are not equatable. The scientific method is a completely different thing. But anyways, I'm drifting off topic here.
Sorry, you're doing good.
So my big bitch, though, with the paranormal, when you take that stuff in mind, and I didn't even talk about the drama or any of the other issues in the paranormal field. But the greatest issue is that we're basically, for the last 150 plus years, paranormal research has really been kind of a hot commodity. Really, since the advent of the spiritualist movement, people have been very, very interested in ghost hunting. You know, it started back with the early days of seances and table wrappings and the very early paranormal investigators, up until modern times when it's prolific on TV and the internet. But we're no closer today than we were 150 years ago. Even with this incredible advances in technology that we have, a lot of the cool equipment and toys and gadgets, because of one thing, and I don't think that it's strictly an equipment issue, it's the fact that for the last 150 years, we've been looking in the wrong place. I think every paranormal group is guilty of this, mine included, to a certain aspect, but probably I'd say we're a lot more open-minded than most.
Yeah.
But every paranormal group is basically replicating what every other group before them is doing, which is kind of it's that self-cycle, that self-fulfilling prophecy, that cycle that just keeps repeating and repeating and repeating.
Like the definition of insanity.
Not finding any evidence.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The hamster insanity.
we're all looking in the same place. We're not looking in the correct place, but we're all looking in the same place. Now, Tim, is the most... You've been on a couple of ghost hunts, right?
No. Actually, I've managed to avoid them
never?
All these years. No.
Wow,
I'd like to go on one, but...
You've never done like a ghost tour or anything, really?
No, I went to one sort of spooky location, but it was in the Bridgewater Triangle. It was had all kinds of weird stuff had happened there, so it wasn't so much a ghost. I'd never been to a haunted locale. So, no,
really?
I'd like to.
Well,
We're
going to have to change that.
Yeah, someone should in the Massachusetts area should contact me to take me on one.
Yeah, we'll have to change that.
The problem is, you know how I feel about the ghost hunters. They're like juggalos. I try to avoid them.
I agree. So. I completely agree. So, if you go on any serious investigations with groups, what you'll see, time and time again, despite the group, despite the geographic area, is that basically... The process is exactly the same. We're all looking in the same place. We're using similar types of equipment. We're looking for similar types of energies. We're looking basically in the wrong place. But there is a very important aspect of every single paranormal event or encounter that not one group outside of maybe just a few, my group is one, has been ignoring. A very, very... probably the most common, it's the number one commonality in every single, underline, every single paranormal event. What is it? What is the one reported, or the one thing that is present in every single paranormal event? Tim?
I want to say the witness. But,
exactly.
Well, it is. It's you. It's the observer.
All right.
Yes, it is. It is the human conscious connection to that event. And for the last 150 years, we have been woefully inadequate in studying that. We have not looked at what is our piece of the puzzle. What is our connection to the phenomena?
Hmm.
Why are we not looking at the most obvious and glaring thing that's present every single time?
That is, right. The number one
tool. It is absolutely the smoking gun that needs to be eliminated, and no paranormal group is doing it. Now, my group does.
The poltergeist research does touch on that, though. So, but we keep that separate from ghost. You know, they do acknowledge that the agent, the human agent, is the trigger. But the ghost stuff, yeah, not at all. Just, I just want to throw that in there.
No, totally different disciplines, too. I think, you know, the two are not even compatible. But, for instance, my group, one of the things that we do that I think is very important is we monitor brainwaves on an investigation. We will actually look to see what the recipient's brainwave state is when they have an experiential event. So we're able to determine if there is a human component that is either helping to cause slash create the event, or if it's simply we are in a different, perhaps more receptive state when these events actually occur.
Yeah.
But the human aspect is what has been completely ignored, and it's probably the most important thing.
How do you, I'm just wondering how you grapple with the challenge of that. Of how to study the human element. You told me what you do, so I guess you
Okay, yeah,
more.
Yeah. So I lost track of where I was going with that. Your original question, you asked me how this tied into the grid.
Yeah.
Okay. So we are an integral part of the grid as well. Our connection to the beyond, whatever you want to call it, as we call it, the grid, but the unexplained is us. We are the common denominator. There are many things that are happening both physiologically, physically, consciously, unconsciously, subconsciously, within us that are allowing that connection to take place. So dead or alive are basically different shades of gray. So when you talk about death, first of all, when you hear the word death, death is not a light switch. You don't turn a switch off and a person is dead. Death is actually a process. It is a physiological process of the body shutting down. Now, we know that folks that have died, clinically, quote, died, there have been folks that have been resuscitated or brought back to life up to 2 hours after they were clinically pronounced dead.
Right.
So, where did that person's consciousness go? Where did that ego, everything that person's experiences, their memories, where did what makes that person who they are, where did that go during those 2 hours that person died? That's what I think is the, quote, ghost that we're talking about here. So when we talk about ghost hunting and the connection to the grid, I think that we are simply exploring an unknown, at this point, conscious energy, something that is emitted from us upon death. There are actually many different theories. There's the holographic brain theory. I mean, there's a lot of different ideas as far as consciousness and memories and your soul. But my belief, and I think Marie agrees, is that in the grid, you exist. I'm trying to think of the best way to explain this. You are connected to everyone else, first of all. Each and every one of us is connected, whether you're alive, dead, never been born, we're all connected.
Okay.
Have not been born yet.
That field of information, it's the information stays there forever. It doesn't go away.
Hmm.
Right. You are connected to that information. You are connected to other people. You know, we share common DNA. We've got lots of connections to other people. So when you die, something has to happen. Something happens. Obviously, there's physical things that happen upon physical death, decay, etc. But who you are is kind of a big question. What happens to that? Does that survive death, and does it go elsewhere? Does it go outside of the body? Now, if you look at the example that I gave of folks that have died, been brought back, been declared clinically dead, brought back to life 2 hours later, that whole idea is what fascinates me, because you're dead, you're quote dead, but yet you're brought back to life and you're still you.
Yeah, so you're not somebody else. Unless it's a horror movie. You
know? Yeah, that would be a good movie. Yeah, that would be a horror movie.
So that is how it connects to the grid, because I really believe that we don't just die. When you die, your energy, it simply transfers elsewhere.
Yeah.
It goes someplace else.
Well,
and then in the case that I just gave, it can come back as well.
But not only that, we wrote New Page Books put out a anthology about ghosts and hauntings, and Larry and I wrote a chapter called "When Is a Ghost Not a Ghost?"
Mm-hmm.
Because we were able, just he and I, to come up with, you know, 8 or 9 different possibilities to explain what a ghost is, rather than everybody always focuses on that one idea that it's got to be the spiritual essence. Okay, what the heck is that? Of a dead person. You know, we talk about everything from somebody who exists on another timeline and another reality or dimension to, you know, a imprint of energy to whatever. I think we came up with a whole bunch of different explanations. The grid allows us to go beyond the tried and true nuts and bolts explanations for everything from ghosts to aliens, to cryptids, to psychic phenomenon.
Sure.
Maybe it's not what we think it is. Maybe the cryptids are coming from another dimension entirely, which could explain why a lot of the sightings are so erratic, are so, you know, inconsistent.
Hmm.
They're not creatures that are hiding out in the woods. They are literally popping in and out of view right in front of people's eyes.
Yeah, they're just
and
crossing
a lot of
through,
do
yeah.
It, yeah, when I was in MUFON, I can't tell you how many reports came in from people who saw UFOs that described them like being a movie projection.
Mm-hmm.
It appeared suddenly, and then it just vanished. It didn't fly off. It just flickered out like you turned off a movie camera. So it's just that idea of coming up with different possible explanations for not just the paranormal, but the normal. And Larry was talking about how, you know, the humans, the observer is the common denominator in any kind of paranormal event. Well, we also got into the fact that our physiology is half of what allows us to experience the paranormal, and the other half is what's happening environmentally or externally. And when certain things align, that's when we get to experience one of these other levels of the grid. And when they don't align, you don't.
Right.
And so then we wanted to try to figure out what those different triggers and mechanisms were. You know, we talked about everything from hormones and brain chemicals to prescription drugs that people take to, you know, things in the environment, the weather, the climate, precipitation, EM fields, all of that stuff is constantly at play. And why is it that you can see something and a person standing next to you doesn't see it? Obviously, human physiology comes into play here. So all of that stuff was what made us feel like a ghost is not just what we've been told it is all these years.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. You really hit the nail on the head on a lot of stuff there. Like had me humming there as you spoke.
Well,
which is a good sign.
Why ghost hunters never catch ghosts, because they're chasing something that is not going to happen unless those elements are perfectly aligned, and you cannot force that.
Yeah. What's the end game of ghost hunters supposed to be anyway? Is the ghost supposed to stop running like the fugitive? Is the ghost going to be?
Put it above the fireplace.
Series finale of Ghost Hunters. The ghost finally stops. He's like, listen, I've had enough. It's been 10 years. What do you want to know?
Yeah, leave me alone.
Yeah.
I'm not dead. Leave me alone.
Yeah, he's just like, I'm just an old man. Oh, God. Yeah, like you did hit the nail on the head. It seems like I'm in total agreement with you about this paranormal, this dependency by the paranormal on an amalgamation of different factors that it seems like we haven't quite been able to pin down yet. But I've used the example. I suggested that we need like a statistical study of UFOs, and my example was because you might be able to figure out if you're if you're a teenage girl driving through the panhandle of Texas on a Tuesday afternoon, the day after a solar eclipse, you're almost guaranteed to see a Bigfoot. It's like, somehow that might possibly come out through the data, but who knows.
And you know what? Yeah. That is going to be a real bitch to do, to figure out all of those different elements that have to, and that's why, you know, Larry with his group, just starting on some of the physiological tests that you can do, testing brain waves and, you know, even doing questionnaires to find out what people ate before they came to an investigation or what they drank or what prescription drugs they were on. I mean, it is so complex trying to figure out.
Yeah.
But the clues are there, and the clues are there by looking at the commonalities in all of these experiences. So if you have 25 people, if you have 25 women who are menstruating, but they all
did you really have to say that? Did you really have to go there?
If you're talking about, you know, if you have 25 people that all experienced something and another 25 that didn't, and the first 25 happened to all be, you know, I don't know, they all had a salami sandwich for lunch. Maybe there's some chemical in the salami that you got to start looking at. Mm. I mean, that's what we have to look at. People don't, I think a lot of people in the paranormal are as bad as the diehard skeptics. They don't want to let go.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, they don't want to let go of their ideas or because that's their identity. They've built their career, quote unquote, pushing the same crap over and over again. But that's why we don't have any answers. There's too many people pushing the crap. You know?
Exactly. Well, and that's, I think, one of the strong issues with the whole orb phenomena. You know, there's enough scientific evidence to prove what they actually are, but yet you got people that are so, they are such ardent believers in their own reality that they're not willing to accept fact.
Yeah. Well, I thought you were going to say more about orbs because Marie had set you up there earlier. I was waiting for a Larry rant, but
Larry
you tempered it. that's why when you started talking about orbs, I was like, "Ooh, here we go!"
so annoying. I see pictures go down my Facebook wall, and the fanaticism of the comments. Oh, it's an orb. It's real. It's real. It's spiritual.
Right.
And anybody. Oh, so help me God, if you go in and try to scientifically, you know, explain them, they will crucify you.
Yeah.
Now, you tell me how that is any different from the diehard skeptics who won't even open their minds enough to consider that some of these things people are experiencing might actually be real. I don't see how it's extremism just on the other end. And it's,
well, I was going to make the point from what we were just talking about that, it's interesting in a way because we're talking about how the paranormal needs to look more at the human element of all this. And when just taking from what you just said, Marie, it's like maybe the scientific community that does look at the paranormal needs to take the more look at the paranormal side of it. Do you know what I mean? If the two groups can come together, maybe they'd be able to figure something out in a better way because each side, I feel like the paranormal people, they don't want to bring the human element into it because
it makes it less TV-ish.
Yes.
You know?
It does, yeah.
But
I think, too, you have to really realize that there is a very strong polarization in the paranormal field as far as motives into the investigation. You've got several different cliquish groups. You've got groups that are in it for scientific reasons or that claim that they're in it for scientific reasons that really are after the truth. You've got groups that do it strictly as a hobby. They have nothing else to do on the weekend, so it's, you know, fun for a bunch of groups, or a bunch of folks to get together and actually go out and try. Then you've got groups that are the thrill seeker type groups, which are more interested in going out to spooky places and just getting the shit scared out of each other. And then there's the final group, I don't really even have a term for it, but the groups that use it as an opportunity to hook up with other people, to go out and get drunk, to do a lot of stupid immoral stuff, it gives them kind of an extra avenue, I guess, to do that. I mean, unless there's such division in the paranormal, unless there was some sort of
governing body, which would never happen. I mean, there's certainly been talk of that. But unless there's some sort of a governing body that sets standards for investigation and sets methodologies, data analysis, standards, et cetera, you're never going to get this into the realm of serious science. Serious scientists look down on folks in the paranormal, for the most part, as being just hobbyists. They're the mom and pops that are running around with $40, $50 K2 meters off of eBay and watching the TV shows. They're not looking at this as a legitimate science because there are so many there is such lack of standards, first of all, within the paranormal. You know, that's one of the greatest things about legitimate science is that there are tried, true, proven standards that are followed. You've got the scientific method is out there at the forefront. It is a set of processes and procedures that you follow and every other group follows, and therefore you have standardization. That right. It doesn't exist in the paranormal.
And that's because mainly ego. Just people believe their way.
It's all kinds of reasons. I don't even, the paranormal is a mess.
Every time I turn around and look at Facebook, there's some new group that's invited me to like their page or some new group starting up. And you go and you look at their page and you know, you've got, usually it's a male that runs the group. Sometimes it's females that run the group, but usually it's a male that runs the group. And it's, they're surrounded with females that are in the group. And the first thing you normally see is they've got their black t-shirts on or their affliction t-shirts with the gelled hair. But usually they've got the black t-shirts on with their paranormal logos on the shirt. And, you know, they've got the hands crossed in front of their body look. And I mean, they're just totally looking, trying to look like rock star thugs. Paranormal studs.
Yeah.
Paranormal thugs.
So, a scientist that would see something like that. I mean, have you ever seen Stephen Hawking? Well,
that's a stretch. I mean, I'd like to see Stephen Hawking in an affliction T-shirt. It'd be
Neil
awesome.
Or DeGrasse Tyson.
Yeah. Michio Kaku wearing the affliction T-shirt and the gelled hair. I mean, that's just not something right. that you see. It's not something that's taken seriously when you have that depiction.
Well, it's you're absolutely right about that. I never really gave it that much consideration because I just have written
it's
these
so
people off.
It's culture driven, you know.
It is.
I've come to the conclusion that it's. Larry made the point earlier that you really need to put research in quotes with this stuff because it's become as much a business as it is a research endeavor.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's part of the problem.
It's big business, Tim.
It is big business for some folks. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not making much myself, but I was never much of a businessman, so.
Well, we don't have our own TV show, so we're not making any.
Right.
But, you know, we're putting out books that are kind of pushing the boundaries, and that's what we want to do. And
pushing the boundaries and pissing people off.
Pissing people off. Like,
yeah, well,
what?
You guys are telling it like it is. I don't disagree with anything you said. I mean, as I said, it's turned into a business. I wouldn't even say for better or for worse. It's for worse. It's this sort of like... You wonder if it's, I've likened it to professional wrestling on the show a lot before, and it's like, it's part of it's there, it's both a big con in a way, and it's
right.
Sure.
Part of the business end of the paranormal is, they don't want you to ever know that it's probably, I mean, I like to think that it's not fake, quote unquote, but it's kind of the same idea of professional. There's a big, like, sort of like, don't look behind the mirror thing, or don't look behind the curtain. It's,
right.
They don't want you to know that we don't know the answer to UFOs. They don't want you to know that it may not be aliens.
Right, exactly, because that blows the whole glamorous ancient alien or I've been abducted, you know, it just really blows people's identities. Yeah. They grab onto these identities so hard and they refuse to let go. And
yeah.
It's like, don't you want to know the truth? Oh, no, I just want to know the truth as I see it. That's what it is.
Right, and they insist that they're on the, you know, the warpath to get to the bottom of this, but in their hearts and minds, I don't think they really are, because they really, if they did that, then the jig would be up on their stuff.
Well, so. And I think, too, if you really are on the warpath to get to the truth, you got to be willing to do an awful lot of really boring reading and research into all arenas of science, from anatomy to biology to quantum physics to... You know, endocrinology even. I mean, if you really, truly want to get to the truth, you need to be well-read and widely read. And nobody wants to do that because that's not glamorous.
Hmm.
No, it's not. And I think that you also have to be able to reconcile the idea that your idea may not be correct.
Right, exactly.
Right.
You have to be comfortable with the idea of being wrong.
Yeah.
And that's a tough pill to swallow for almost anyone.
Oh,
so,
sure it is.
Before I jumped into viral mythology, one thing that was sort of perplexing me, and I asked you to sort of bring these things down to sort of a basic level. We talked about information in a lot of ways here. I guess, how does science see information? Does it see it as... Because I'm perplexed by how to sort of envision it in my mind.
You know,
dimension?
Just,
like, how? What is it?
Well, no. I mean, information is sort of a catchphrase for everything that has ever been manifested in a physical sense, I guess you could say, whether it's force, energy, matter, form. It's information. In other words, if you buy into information theory, it all comes down to its and bits. But it's just the idea that whatever has been out there before, is now, and ever will be, comes down to information. I don't know. It's kind of hard to describe, isn't it, Larry? But really it means everything that has ever been physically manifest.
Is like somehow encoded in the ether, if you will?
Well, yeah. But see, you're a different set of information than Larry is.
Hmm.
You're both human, but you've got different parts, you know, different ideas, you have a different DNA, different makeup, whatever. Sure. But we're all made out of information, which literally dictates who we are, what we look like, what species we are.
Hmm.
But that information can vary from thing to thing, from person to person.
Experience to experience.
And we would keep reading about it, you know, information. It's like, well, that sounds like a real computer technology oriented term, and that's actually where it comes from. But it really is something that you constantly read about in terms of trying to describe everything that ever was, is, or will be. And I know that sounds kind of religious, but I'm talking about things that have become physically manifest. Whether you're talking about a planet, a galaxy, a person, or a blade of grass, it all comes down to information.
Or even an orb.
An orb. You know, an orb is information, too. It's dust particle, but it's, you know.
Yeah, just like the National Enquirer is a publication.
Yeah. But I guess it's like your stamp. You know, it's like your physical stamp, the information that makes up who or what you are, or what a computer is, or what a glass or a bottle is.
Well, I feel like, I'm understanding you, but I'm still trying to like put it into
abstract.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it's like a dimension. You wonder if it is a dimension that we don't quite.
Well, I think information just permeates everything.
So it's just like a basic fabric, kind of.
Yeah. If something is going to become physically manifest, so that you can perceive it, it's created from pieces of information. Some of those pieces may be red, human, short, ugly, you know, stupid. God, it's hard to really verbalize it. And I think we've seen it enough in all of our research that we get it in a sort of intrinsic, you know, subconscious sense. But yeah, it's just sort of the scientist's way of saying stuff.
Yeah.
The stuff from which everything evolves and is made manifest.
It's a tricky topic, that's for
it
sure.
Is.
And I
yeah.
give you guys kudos, because it's a difficult thing to really wrap your mind around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's been other names for it, you know.
I'm getting some weird reverb here, Larry.
Yeah, we are. I think Larry's doing it.
It's the orbs.
What do you want, like a cell phone or something? Or a speakerphone?
No, it's my orb phone.
All right. Try and contain it.
Smartass. LaRue.
Jesus, LaRue.
You know what's happening, Tim, is he's starting to disintegrate into his other reality. We have to hold on as long as we can.
Yeah, he's melting into the ether here.
Melting into the ether.
Yeah, my other reality of my bed, right?
Well, tell me about viral mythology. Now, this one just came out relatively recently, and as I said, the subtitle here is How the Truth of the Ancients Was Encoded and Passed Down Through Legend, Art, and Architecture. So how did this all come about? And give me a little thumbnail on the book.
Wow, this is a sort of a deviation from stuff we've done before, but I think this book is really cool, and it's getting, you know, really good reaction. We sort of wanted to write about whether or not there was truth, whether historical, scientific, spiritual, whatever, whether there was truth embedded in stories. That's how it started.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just sort of morphed into looking at how we communicate ideas and information again using certain means, whether it's primitive rock art and cave art or, you know, more sophisticated methods of art, architecture, writing. How do we find the truth, though, that is trying to be conveyed in those methods of communication? And how did things go viral a long time ago? How did ideas spread from region to region, nation to nation, continent to continent, thousands of years ago before they had the internet, before they had cell phones and texting and social networking? And why did certain ideas spread and not others? Mm. So that really sort of morphed into a book that really examines looking for truth in, I don't want to say non-truthful means, but, you know, indirect ways.
Yeah, Now I had a word there for it, but obscure, peripheral ways maybe.
Right, exactly. Because the funny thing is that we found out is that the greatest truths are often communicated in those very ways instead of directly to you. We write nonfiction books. We talk about facts and statistics and theories, but sometimes that doesn't quite get to people on the deep enough level where they really grasp it. But if you tell somebody a story and you embed that same factual information into that story, or if they go see a movie or a TV series, they get it on a whole different, deeper level. I think it really speaks to the subconscious where they kind of get it.
I'm really interested in this because we just did a show about, it hasn't aired yet, but it's about sort of like how the ancients all through time and really probably knew about America and were coming here, and it was just a big secret.
Exactly. I think they knew a lot of stuff. And this is really our way of saying, how do we go back and find out what they knew? Because they didn't leave us nonfiction books, did they? You know, It seems like they embedded most of their ideas and understanding of the world around them in their myths, in their religious writings, in their art, in their architecture, whether it's the pyramids or Easter Island or different monuments or beautiful churches and temples that had so much symbolism encoded in them. It's like, what were they trying to tell us? And how do we today try to properly interpret that?
Well, it's remarkable that it's sad that the mainstream, they look at where we are today as this straight line of upward evolution as far as thoughts and ideas and stuff. And it's just very frustrating for people like me and you guys who are really more open to the idea that there was a lot more going on in our history that we can be so blinded to.
Right. Do we really know what our history is? Because let's put it this way. How much of the ideas and information that made it from there to here is accurate? How much got lost? How much was suppressed? How much was altered, rewritten? Anytime a new civilization was conquered by another civililization, they literally rewrote their history.
Yeah. And so destroyed all their stuff.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. It destroyed all their artifacts and all the evidence of who those people were. And now here we are left with very little clues as to the credibility or the accuracy of our own history.
Well, it's interesting you guys have examples of stuff where science is passed down in myths and legends and stuff like that, which is interesting. It's because I think that a critical part of the book that people need to wrap their minds around, too, is that we live in a completely different world now. It's hard to even imagine, but they weren't people couldn't just write books back in the day before the printing.
Right.
Before the printing press, people literally could not really write books. So it's,
it was, yeah, it was all orally passed down, or it was passed down through other means, like their art, their architecture, scratching stuff on the side of a cave wall.
Yeah. So we're bound by the limitations of these previous worlds, which far outnumber us in time wise.
Exactly. Right.
Which is the challenge of it all.
But we still can learn so much about what they were probably thinking or trying to tell us by what goes viral today. Mm-hmm. Because we're still human. I mean, right? They were human, we're human. And so what turns us on today that makes us spread an idea or a piece of information that's given us probably was the same thing that they went through. And so we have to try to understand that whatever information did make it, all those thousands of years it did survive, that wasn't suppressed, burned down, you know, buried under the Vatican or whatever, that it was important enough to keep it going, to sort of, you know, keep the chain going, whether they passed on orally or through written means or through art. It was important enough to them to get it down and try to let it keep passing on from generation to generation. But we're still missing so much of that because, let's face it, throughout our history, there were political and religious leaders that did not want certain pieces of knowledge or certain types of information to survive because it went against what they needed the populaces to believe so that they could control them.
Was that a sneeze? Bless you, Larry.
Thank you.
You've touched on the concept of the ancient aliens earlier, but how much of that do you get into in the book, and what's your take on all that? Because that seems...
Ooh, I'm going to let Larry take that one.
Yeah, I had a feeling this would be a Larry.
Yeah,
this would be a Larry
one.
I would definitely recommend switching to a style of underwear with no fly.
Okay.
You got to do it, man. You got long balls, Larry. Long balls. You got long-ass balls.
I've got long balls?
Doctor, you seen his balls, right?
Would you say my balls are unusually long?
They're a bit more distended than the average testicles.
You got long-ass balls, Larry. Long ball Larry. That's your new name.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
I've got long balls. What the hell now?
Long balls. Change the draws.